1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And Sansum Clinic, whose multi-specialty team of medical professionals have been providing quality care to you and your family for 98 years. And we're here today with Saul Serrano, who's the coordinator of the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, Jill Sharkey, who's a professor at UCSB's Gewirth School of Education and a co-chair of the strategy team for the South Coast Task Force. And the reason we have our third guest, Pat Keelan, executive director of the Community Action Commission, is that this initiative is all under the Community Action Commission umbrella. So welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So before we begin, let's just talk about Community Action Commission. We've had them on as a guest before. We've had you guys on as a guest before. But one of the things you told me I wasn't aware of before the show began was that this is an organization that is among many throughout the entire country.
That's right. The Community Action Commission of Santa Barbara County is one of over 1,000 community action agencies across the country. We were born out of the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 and the War on Poverty to address issues related to the causes and conditions of poverty.
And this initiative that we're going to talk about today is directly part of your mission.
Absolutely. Our mission is to provide education and supportive services to disadvantaged youth and families throughout Santa Barbara County. So this is a perfect fit for the Community Action Commission.
So when we talk about youth safety, we're not just talking about physical safety, are we? We're talking about safety in a more general sense?
This effort started as a gang prevention, when we talk about safety, we're talking about other things like mental health, access to education, employment, quality of life. And so it's not just physical safety. It's many, as you mentioned, it's many other things.
And Jill, because of your academic background, you're, I guess, an important element in terms of looking at the initiative and what is best practices and what you can bring to the real world from your work in your studies. Is that?
Yeah, that's right. So I was trained originally as a school psychologist, and from that perspective, I understand how these big systems like schools, mental health agencies, law enforcement agencies have a responsibility to serve the youth in our community and how they might do that. And then as a professor, I do research and bring data to understand what's working.
And I looked at your strategic plan. I kind of glanced at it, and one of the things that I kept reading over and over again is that you're numbers-based. I don't know if that was exactly the phrase, but you're really trying to, which I think a lot of donors are looking for in not-for-profits, is to put some type of certainty on outcomes, because everyone talks the talk, but the question is how valid are the methodologies that you use? So I guess one of the things that distinguishes you is not only are you making this effort, but you're trying to actually see if it works.
Definitely. And I do want to clarify that we are in the middle of strategic planning. So the strategic plan, it's in process right now. We're working on it. And what we've shared with a few people is it should be completed by October and released to the public by November.
Okay, because I have some notes for you.
Great.
There was a couple of grammatical mistakes.
Yeah, we're working through all of that.
So I'm glad.
We're aware
I'm
and working through
you,
all of that.
Yeah. So it's interesting that, first of all, CAC, if I may call it CAC,
absolutely,
is a wonderful organization. And what's interesting is it took a while to kind of make this a part of your focus. And you think about the environment that we all live in. The youth violence affects everybody. It affects businesses. It affects people's
security, just not just children's security. So it's great that you that you are looking at this as something that the community really needs to focus on. And it was interesting. I'm only been here 21 years, and I remember when the Saks Fifth Avenue shooting or whatever that was took place. All of a sudden, everyone said, "Wait a minute, this could happen to me." It was like, "Don't worry, you're in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara. Nothing's going to happen." And that was like a wake up call.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that has sort of motivated you?
Definitely. To bring into reality, the young man that was murdered at that Saks Fifth Avenue incident was Luis Angel Linares, who was one of my past students in the work that I did in the past with Los Compadres program through Community Action Commission, working with young men at El Puente, at Los Prietos. And, that was somebody I knew personally and worked with every week, and to hear of his passing, as well as, you know, there was another young man that was murdered that same year at the Fountain during the 4th of July fireworks. One of my past students, Emmanuel, and, you know, there was a third youth that we lost in the community that year. So to have three homicides in the community by youth and towards youth, was really impacting, I think, to those of us that worked with youth directly.
And the symbolism of having it in the Saks Fifth Avenue parking lot, I think, woke up a lot of people that we all live in the same community. There was a sense, I think, that, you know, whatever happens over here on these streets don't affect me because I live in a big house. And right. I think it sort of woke up the community that these kinds of things affect all of us. How much of gang membership and gang violence a function of poverty? How much of it is a function of lack of family? How much of it is a function of lack of education? Or is it all sort of all interrelated?
I'm going to go to our early guiding principles. And one of those that we developed was one size doesn't fit all. And I think we really needed to look at an individual youth per youth basis, because each youth, even though we see groups of youth as a gang, as a group, when people join groups, they do it at the individual level because of individual needs that are unmet, whether that be at school, whether it be with jobs, whether it be at home or family. So there isn't a one entrance. There's many reasons why people are.
I would just jump in there. And some of the research that I do is a lot of times the gang problem is blamed on individuals and families. So I've been looking at what the system responsibility is for gang membership, and particularly at schools. And so when youth come into the school environment, and let's say they do have some challenges in their home environment, the school's a great place for them to feel connected and belong and to succeed. And if the school's not meeting those needs, whether they have a learning difficulty that's not being met or an emotional difficulty that's not being met, then the youth may turn to peers or gangs or delinquent activity to get that sense of belonging, self-esteem, power, money, all the things that we as humans crave and need. If that need's not met in our community, by our families and by our schools, then we'll turn to ways that aren't productive.
I was recently asked if education plays a role in that, and it definitely does. When we were initially doing the groundwork for the task force, we looked at credit-deficient youth, which were active in the juvenile justice system, and about 90% of the youth involved were credit-deficient, not on track to graduate. And so we knew that there was a direct connection there for youth. If we can keep them in school and if they can succeed in school, then there was there would be great opportunities for them to not engage in street activities or other behaviors.
Well, and then I would just add as well that one of the benefits of being on this task force is that we can hear the voices of all our partners in our heads because we've been working together, which is pretty unique. And I can hear the voice of the schools in my head, and they are responsible for a lot of children's well-being, but they can't do it alone. And one of the best things that we talk about on the task force is that when we have, when things are going well, we all pat each other on the back. But when things are not going well, often we point our finger. And so we don't want to point our finger at the schools. We want to embrace the schools and bring everyone together to support what's going on in the school. So they shouldn't be the lone agency responsible for our youth. There are many, especially in Santa Barbara, many organizations working with youth and other agencies that can help.
Yeah, from all of the teachers and principals we've had on, this is their biggest beef. That is, they become the place of last resort. and the place of first resort. And even some of the organizations that try to intervene will say, we're training the teachers. And so the teachers have you know, not just teaching, it's, mm-hmm. you know, watching out for suicide, you know, watching out for drug abuse, watching out for domestic violence. We're asking teachers, and if you live in a red state, you know, to how to shoot. So we're dealing with so much that these teachers have to do. No wonder everyone is overwhelmed. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
With some health providers, you get the impression that the final goal is profit. But Sansum Clinic is a nonprofit. Their final goal is health.
Sansum Clinic was started by doctors and is still directed by doctors dedicated to offering the very best in healthcare and healing for our patients.
A nonprofit organization where all earnings go back into continually improving healthcare for our community.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansum Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Saul Siriano, What did I say?
Siriano.
So you criticizing my pronunciation?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Serrano.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. How come he didn't complain and you complained?
That's my job.
Okay. That's our producer.
Whatever.
I'm afraid I'll pronounce it wrong.
Yeah, right.
Who's the coordinator of the South Coast Task Force on Youth, Jill Sharkey. Sharkey. I need an interpreter here, don't I? professor of school psychology at UCSB, and Pat Keelan, who is the executive director of the Community Action Commission, which is the umbrella organization. There was an article in the New York Times today, by just happenstance, that talked about an experiment that was done where they took people who were against social services and told them how much money people made in the community because they weren't really aware. And there was a heightened sense of empathy and compassion once they realized that people who they were not particularly concerned about were making so little money that they began to appreciate that these people really needed some assistance. So, you know, one of the things, I guess, that you're, not one of the things, one of the, you know, important things that you're doing is trying to deal with all of the issues of poverty. And poverty is not just people out of work. It's also poverty could be caused by just the fact that you're working very hard, but you're not making enough money to live in this community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The cost of living here in Santa Barbara County is very high, and that presents special problems for our families, particularly single-parent families. And one of the things that we look at, of course, are the causes and conditions of poverty in our local communities. Of course, here in Santa Barbara County, the cost of housing, affordable housing, is very high. We've got child care expenses that are very high. We have other needs around, you know, just basic food and so forth. So all of those things really combine to make things more difficult for a disadvantaged family. And one of the things that I think is important to note that MIT actually has a living wage calculator that we use to kind of gauge our progress. And that here in Santa Barbara County, one individual with two children must make almost $38 an hour in order to live above the poverty level. Many of these families end up working multiple jobs, trying to support their family, just keep a roof over their heads, and that takes them away from their children, which creates, you know, problems for that child and makes them more susceptible and vulnerable to gang activity.
So, not to be overly pessimistic, but assuming you can't change that, are all the things you're doing just palliative? Can you actually make change without changing the basic economic structure of our society? I mean, can you actually help these kids if they're still not going to have a parent home, or they're still not going to have enough nutrition, if they're sharing a room with four other people and they can't study? How depressing is this?
Oh, no. It's so important to, number one, connect youth with positive activities, positive adult role models, help promote their education, get them involved in positive activities after school, give them a vision for their future, whether that's going to college or getting a technical degree. You know, we promote self-sufficiency, and the primary way that we can do that is to help an individual complete their education or job training program, something that's going to help increase their pay scale.
And so, if you look at the most important elements that go into someone joining a gang, I assume this is one of the most important ones. That is the economic stress that these kids are going through.
That is, and that's what, as part of our task force and through our work of our partners, whether it be county, city, or other community-based organizations, we work closely with youth employment programs. But it's not, you know, we always hear in the world of gang prevention, all that youth need is jobs, and sometimes, you know, they're not employable, and so we need to invest in how do we help youth, improve their skills to become employable, know what it's like to, you know, to work through the system to get a job, but also while attaining their education, and maybe education is not for all, and so how can they connect with the trades as well? You know, what programs are available for them? Because, you know, higher education is not for all of our youth, and in our community, I think we're beginning to realize that and figuring out how do we work with those that, you know, that are on college track, but then some, you know, who might be more interested in mechanics or a barber shop, other plumbing, electricians, you know, those sort of things, who could be very good careers to sustain themselves and their families.
So CAC works with people from 0 to 2, to teens, to old, to elderly people.
Absolutely.
So you have discussed certain signs that you can tell that someone's experienced crisis: a personality change, agitation, withdrawal, poor self-care, and homelessness. Is that goes across? I forget 0 to 2s, but are those symptoms indicative of problems among any age group?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And Jill, I don't know if you want to talk about that in terms of mental health and service needs here.
Sure.
In Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I think sometimes the way that, well, speaking of teenagers, the way that teenagers express depression or emotional difficulties is sometimes counterintuitive. So they may be angry, lashing out, fighting, but it's really because of a root of stress and anxiety or depression. And so that... sometimes it's difficult for service providers or well-meaning mental health staff who aren't making that connection with these teenagers who are kind of actively harming the relationship through that behavior. So recognizing that as a sign of distress is important. And sometimes it is the kids who act out who get noticed first, and the kids who are more depressed or quiet about their troubles may get missed. So schools are doing more screening to try to get at that, and linking kids to mental health treatment. Another problem is that youths will turn to substance use to provide a relief from the stress. And going back to what Saul was saying about family and finances and poverty is that can be a downward spiral if the kids, the older kids, are having to help out with either making money or childcare of their younger siblings, and they may have to miss school or other programming in order to do that, and then are feeling anxious and stressed. But we did do a youth survey of this, and one of the things they wanted to get was more financial literacy, which isn't something that's always taught directly in school, but understanding what it means to manage your own finances and take care of your bills and what credit is and things like that. So,
and entrepreneurship, too. Mm-hmm. I think they youth themselves were requesting learning how all that works.
My history is from Wall Street, and I taught financial literacy for a couple of years, and I did some research on success of these programs, and the most compelling information is they don't work. That is, kids can't grasp the way it's being taught, and we need to have new ways of teaching these kids. You know, you just can't talk about compound interest with somebody who has no clue. So, you know, one of the things like I used to do is say, go home and take everything out of your closet that you bought in the last 2 months and stick it on your bed. How much of those things make you happy now? I mean, just sort of make this the connection between spending and happiness. But some of the things that I was teaching just didn't stick. So it's a real challenge to figure out how to make young people, particularly those that don't have a family history of dealing with money, how to make them able to really think about how to deal with it.
That is such an important thing you said, because you said that you did some research to try to figure out if it was working. And that's one thing we're doing in the task force, is trying to make sure these very well-meaning, very passionate service providers make sure they keep track of the impact of their work, because if it's not working, then maybe we can try something else or innovate from there. So it sounds like...
One of the problems with people, including myself, is ego gets in the way. So I was failing. So typically you blame the students. But I said, I can't be that stupid. There's got to be something I'm doing wrong that I could figure out. And it turns out that at least when I was doing the research, there wasn't very many programs that worked. And so there's really a need for sort of to think about how to get to these kids and make it stick. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Sansom Clinic. We're there at the beginning.
And all the little and big steps along the way.
200 physicians for your every need.
A healthcare system where all profits go back into our community's health.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system. Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansom Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Saul Serrano, coordinator of the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, and Jill Sharkey, professor of psychology at UCSB's Gewirth School of Education. And she's also co-chairing the task force. And let's talk about the task force. The task force is, that's sort of a misnomer, isn't it? It's really an effort to, well, you tell us what it is.
It's an initiative that, you know, as I think we were talking earlier in the show about the incident that happened at Saks Fifth Avenue, and as a result of community input and, you know, push to push towards government to do something and react. The cities of Santa Barbara, who was the lead, and brought together cities of Carpinteria and Goleta and the county of Santa Barbara to develop the task force, along with, you know, 1 year community input from various stakeholders and community members. And, you know, out of that work, the task force was established. And Dr. Jill Sharkey has been there from the beginning of that effort, been a part of it and working with the task force. We are not a program, you know, in the sense that we do direct service or provide direct service, but we have many partners that do. Our role is to convene and to help coordinate among all the services, departments, agencies, and, you know, really help work with everyone as a, so at a community we can move in one direction rather than the million in one directions that people want to move when crisis happens, you know, to really have a plan. Kind of in any emergency, you have a plan of how you're going to do things, you know, given the recent fires, debris flow. We have a plan in the county of how things are supposed to work. Well, with this, we didn't have a plan, and so everyone wanted to go in multiple directions. And through this work of the task force, really bringing people together and stakeholders together, we've been able to, one, build trust, build relationships, and establish communication. So, we, you know, should an incident happen, we one, are prepared to deal with it, and two, you know, have the trust to work with each other to move ahead. Faster than in the past.
So I take it when you have these meetings, the various organizations you work with, the information flows both ways. So you're not dictating what you should be doing. You're asking them what they do and trying to come up with what the best plan is.
Correct. A little bit of both. You know, we don't tell or people what to do. If we do, it's because we heard from everyone that there was consensus that this is the direction we need to move. So in that sense, we might give direction based on the input and that we received from a number of people that these are the priorities or this is the direction we need to move. In that case, we might. But it's not after getting input from those that we partner with.
So you have organizations. Some deal with mental health. Some deal with gangs. Some deal with
education.
Child welfare, education. Mm-hmm. Is there collaboration, not just in information flows, but in terms of if you're working with youth offenders and you're afraid somebody's at risk of suicide, is there sort of lines of communication to be able to refer that person to the right group so that you don't have to, as your group, deal with things you're not really prepared
right.
to deal with?
That is. Do you want me to?
You should answer, and then I'll interrupt you.
Okay.
So she'll correct you. If you
she will correct me, yes, which I'm appreciative of. Yes, to answer that question, both are in our partnerships. I'll give one example. We were having a meeting, and there was a program who said, you know, we have a group of girls that need, you know, they're coming up with issues of reproductive health and those things. And there was another group there that said, you know, we can come in next week and start program and provide that for your girls. And so really developing those relationships that flourish above and beyond what any individual program can do. And I think during duration of the task force, we've seen many programs come and go. We've seen programs lose funding and not exist anymore. And so sometimes we get really tied to one program. And it's good, you know, we should. But we also got to remember that there's a community there past any program. And so really having a community of providers to work with each other and do that has been helpful. In those cases of suicide and or, you know, you mentioned the word suicide. I do want to acknowledge that we are in Suicide Prevention Month, September, and there's been a lot of work in the community currently this week to bring that to light. And that's across ages and not just youth. But that's, you know, that is one example. Also want to point out that through Community Action Commission, we host a 211 line for the county. And so we have a direct, you know, connection with 211. we promote 211 and people accessing the service that way, so that it's centralized. Sometimes I used to get into fights with 211, especially around the conversation of resource guides. When we go meet with our organizations, everyone wants to have a resource guide. It's helpful, but the moment you print it, they're out of date. Mm-hmm. And I had to come to that hard conversations with the coordinator of 211, saying, you know, no, we need our own. We need, you know, it needs to be specialized. And they'd be like, no, but it's not helpful to have 1,000 different ones confusing the community. And so just being able to work with 211 lines information and being able to connect many programs to others through that has also been helpful.
And one of the things about anything to do with mental health, particularly with young people, is the stigma. How do you get kids to discuss these issues when they're, you know, ashamed or embarrassed? And I know there's been attempts at the school through other organizations to destigmatize it. But, you know, do you call, does your best friend call the school and say, my friend is very depressed? I mean, it just seems like really tough path.
Yeah, this is a great question. We did a youth needs assessment, and mental health stigma came up amongst the groups frequently. And basically, there were a lot of components to it. So a lot of youth are nervous to speak to a professional. I think a lot of times they don't think that the counselor or therapist will understand them. And that could be in part also because they don't represent their cultural background. And so we need more counselors and therapists who are more familiar with or from the different cultural backgrounds of the students in the schools. But also the youth feel like sometimes they're not speaking their language generationally. So they would rather hear from their peers about where to go or who to see. When they cite who they go to when they are having a problem, it's their friends first. And then it's usually a teacher or a counselor at the school. And so that's good news because the schools have made a concerted effort to provide those services within the school environment, but they're less likely to go to people outside of the school or call a crisis hotline, for example. So it's really about, I think, creating some social media and or campaigns that the youth develop themselves for each other, and then teaching them how to recognize signs of distress and then refer their peers to more support.
So speaking of shame and psychological issues, one of the things that this whole country has been having to deal with is bullying. And, mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of solutions, you know, restorative justice or, you know, all kinds of ways to deal with it. But bullying is, since the time of schools, has been a real problem. Is that something that we need to really not take so casually, that we really need to focus on? Because so many things sort of get interrelated to that. If someone has a mental health problem, if someone's not doing well at school, they could get bullied, which just exacerbates the problem.
If I can add to that, I got a call from some program in Carpinteria saying, you know, we need education from parents on bullying, but we need it in Spanish. And so when I went to various places to look for information in Spanish, most of it is available in English for bullying. And so kind of had to develop a lot myself. I mean, we're talking, you know, 8 years ago, so maybe now, you know, I'm not aware. And now there might be some. But we did have a vacuum of available resources in Spanish, for especially for bullying. And then, you know, there's that cultural lens that's also important. I think, you know, I think there was about 50 parents in a group that I did in Carpinteria, and in meeting with them, it was a shock. But I was respectful of the cultural context in the room. And I even was invited to present at this in Lompoc at a countywide or tri-county parent conference. And it was very different having Mixteco people in the room and their experience to bullying. And you know, even had a Mixteco mom say, you know, a lot of the Spanish-speaking Mexicanos, Mexicans harass us because we don't speak Spanish, you know, through a translator. And she asked, you know, how do I frame that to my kids who are seeing us being bullied? And so that was a big question that was caught off guard. And so I think, you know, it's a community-wide effort that we need to do some work around bullying, well, not just with mm-hmm. kids, but community-wide.
Yeah, and I would say that, well, I always say bullying is the number one school violence prevalent school violence that happens in schools. But and it schools are taking it very seriously, so they do have training and campaigns against bullying. I think what's difficult is that bullying isn't just physical or verbal. It can be relational, and it can also now it's cyberbullying, and cyberbullying is so difficult to track. As a sort of outside of this initiative, I have teamed up with computer science faculty at UCSB to try to do some computer detection of cyberbullying on YouTube and then provide a computer science adapted response. But obviously, like, my role would be to bring it into the community and find out what would be an acceptable way to use that type of tool. But it, none of that has been done at this point. And
Is bullying a factor in joining a gang? I mean, if I were being bullied and a couple of guys came over to me and said, you know, we'll protect you, does that... So it all kind of relates. Is that you don't have anyone to protect you, so you go to the gang?
For some youth, yeah, that is the case. You know, walking to and from school, or you know, even where they live, or even some peers, and so you know, we hear of that at the elementary levels, and so we've heard from a number of administrators that you know, we need to start doing some work at the elementary levels too of intervention and teaching life skills and choices and those things and address bullying at the same time.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
With some health providers, you get the impression that the final goal is profit. But Sansum Clinic is a nonprofit. Their final goal is health.
Sansum Clinic was started by doctors and is still directed by doctors dedicated to offering the very best in healthcare and healing for our patients.
A nonprofit organization where all earnings go back into continually improving healthcare for our community.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansum Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, communicate, and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Saul Serrano, coordinator of the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, and Dr. Jill Sharkey, professor at the School of Psychology at UCSB, which is part of the Gavert School. So the Gavert School, that's right, has a psychologist. I knew that because I knew someone that went there.
Yeah.
So we talk about bullying. What about bullying on steroids, which is LGBT issues? Is that a problem here? In such a nice community, are LGBTQ people being bullied in schools?
Yes, and you know, in respect to our work in the task force, a number of our providers, whether it be a youth employment program or a mentoring program, we've heard from them that we have, you know, parents coming in and telling these programs, my kid's identifying as LGBTQ, can you fix them, please? And so really, you know, making it, you know, so a lot of our partners came in and said, we don't know what to say because we don't have the proper training. And so we've, partnered with Pacific Pride as well as SB10 to come in and help, you know, educate our providers, our community providers, on how to deal with the situations when you have parents asking, programs to fix their kids.
Okay, so this is a loaded question, but how are the, and you, I don't know if you want to answer this, but how are the schools dealing with it? Are they taking it seriously? If some child is really being bullied, let's forget about the philosophy of what you do about them over the long term, but how do you protect these kids in school today? Are they making an effort to really to protect them?
Yeah, absolutely. The schools, in the past, there's been this sort of zero tolerance policy thing going around, and that sounds really great. But what the zero tolerance policy does is it removes it punishes any perpetrator of something without providing them with the tools and skills to do a better job, and then it removes them from the face of their crime, I guess you could say. So now they've been moving towards more of a restorative approach to help the victim feel like there was an amend for what happened, and then also for the person who was the bully to get some have to face what they did and also make a correction for it. And then also there's more programming that's really teaching skills for the whole population. So universal programming for kids on how to respond to bullying, because we know that the best thing to stop bullying is bystanders intervening and peers helping. And so those things have all become much more prevalent in the schools, and schools do take it very seriously compared to, say, when I was in school.
So let's go a step further from bullying. Now let's talk about it escalates to sexual abuse. Is that a problem in this community?
Definitely. We've been hearing anecdotally in recent months that there's been an uptick in cases that young people disclosing. And so, we want to create safe environments where youth feel, that they're going to be heard and listened to and respected and not dismissed.
Well, and I want to circle back to the LGBTQ conversation, mm-hmm. because what you can imagine with these families who are saying, oh, can you fix my child? A lot of times the young people who are experiencing discrimination based on if it's maybe they're bicultural or from two different cultures within their family or LGBTQ, there might be multiple ways in which they're discriminated against. And you can see that when you move from the general population in the schools to populations in juvenile justice systems and in detention centers, the further along in the system you get, the more likely that person is to have multiple reasons to have been discriminated against, which shows that that path is not a fair path for everyone.
And parents saying, can you fix my child, is not the only thing we've heard from providers. We've also heard other parents saying, I don't want my kid to go to that program because of those kids that are in there. And so really, accessibility programs sometimes becomes hard for some youth to participate because their parents will hold them back. Their parents will say, I don't want them around, other LGBTQ youth. And so, there's work to be done. But I also want to raise, there's also another, we probably don't have enough time to get into the other issue, and that is immigration and DACA. That's also a reality amongst the population of youth that we work with and serve.
Yeah, I can imagine with everything else these kids have to go through, it's never been easy to be a teen, worrying that your parents aren't going to be home when you get home from school. And that must be, an incredible amount of pressure on these kids.
Yeah, and also feeling safe in school. And so if you're not going to feel safe at home, you're not going to feel safe in school. Where the peers, then who's going to protect you? Who's going to save you? Who's going to be there for you unconditionally? And those are the challenges, sometimes competitions, that we have.
So we've been on for almost 50 minutes now, and it's been fairly depressing. Yet there are some numbers that sort of go against what we're talking about. Is it true that juvenile crimes have been on a decline in Santa Barbara County?
Yes, and I wouldn't say it's, we've been depressing. And, I think when we live in this world, it does sometimes you have to stop and say, is this depressing? But it's not. I think, when you look back 10, 15 years and we didn't do a lot of this work, I think that's depressing. Now that we are doing this work really bringing light to the community, it's encouraging. And then when you go further and look at the numbers, it looks good when you look at the schools and all the intervention processes that they have and all the many programs in the community that serve and work with youth, endless hours filled with passion and, using evidence-based practices. It's really encouraging. And so, yes, it is a scary world, but there's also a lot of, things to help, you know, with, for the community and for our youth.
So, but why is, but to the specific question, why have there been less crimes?
Oh, well, I mean, we totally attribute all of the declines in juvenile probation to Saul and his work on the task force.
No.
But we like to joke about that because actually those trends have been going down in Santa Barbara County, but across the state and nationally as well. So there has been a trend, downward trend in juvenile crime. We saw a little bit of an uptick, which was different than the state or the nation a couple of years ago, but that has now trended down along with the rest of the state and nation. So it isn't just us that's having this success in the crime rates. And it's, I mean, it could be attributed to so many different things. Everything from First Five programming started long enough ago that it's now having an impact. The ability of these evidence-based treatments becoming more popular and even required by funding agencies. The use of data to inform decisions, I think, has been something that's more recently applied even amongst smaller nonprofit organizations. So there's a lot of things to think about as to why the crime rates have gone down.
Including many things related to school districts and ed code that's changed from zero tolerance policies. We knew that those sometimes would push youth into the juvenile justice system, and those have changed, as well as our juvenile justice partners have said, we're not going to take kids if they don't need to be with us. And so there's been not just a shift in one area, but in many areas in the community that have contributed. And the community itself, has been a big part of saying, you know, we're going to be involved and we're going to own a lot of this.
It's too bad, Jill, you already have your PhD because there are so many thesis potentials here.
No, that's great because just let me know any ideas you have. My students are always looking for that topic.
You just listen to your, on the tape of this, you listed eight great papers.
Yeah, that I'm always writing papers.
Okay. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Sansom Clinic, we're there at the beginning.
And all the little and big steps along the way.
200 physicians for your every need.
A healthcare system where all profits go back into our community's health.
Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system. Your health.
Your doctors.
Your healthcare system.
Sansom Clinic. Good for you.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Saul Serrano, coordinator of South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, and Dr. Jill Sharkey, professor of psychology at the School of Psychology at UCSB, the Gewirth School of Education. So, What are the demographics of these kids? They're all poor, right? And they all come from single-family homes. There's nobody whose child is parents are a doctor, right?
That's right. As soon as you're married, you're okay.
You're right.
Your kids are going to be okay. You don't have to worry about their
safety.
So
this goes across everybody. This is not limited to all
That's right. And in fact, you'll see rates of neglect, abuse, sexual abuse are not specific to any demographic or social economic strata. So, you know, there are things that are associated with being in poverty in terms of needing to work a lot and maybe having less support at home. But I am a parent and my children are in 8th grade and 6th grade, and I worry frequently about their safety, whether that's bullying, harassment, walking downtown on the fast one-way streets, or, you know, anything, cyberbullying. So I think these are things that the whole community should be aware of and working on, and that by making things safer for everyone, then we can all take a part in that.
I do want to point anecdotally, we've heard from our partners that in the recent uptake that we, you know, and by uptake, it hasn't been a huge one. It's been a small one, but a noticeable in youth and getting involved in gangs. They've noticed a multicultural, rather than before in the past when it was mainly Latino students, that there's some more multicultural youth, you know, joining or getting involved or associating. And I also want to point out a number of years ago, the probation department did a reducing racial and ethnic disparities to look at why we incarcerate or put youth on probation, why there's a disparity based on, and there was a lot of work that was done with that that led to other work, such as the Santa Barbara County Probation Data Mining Project, which looked at the rates of incarceration for youth in our county compared to other counties. And they found that, you know, in our county, we incarcerate youth twice the rate, let's say, that Ventura would incarcerate youth.
And is that true for both North and South?
Yeah, that was a countywide.
But it's not, there's no disparity between the North and the South?
If the data wasn't available to separate that, I don't know if, you know, they can separate that, but it was countywide that, you know, just by living, whether it be Santa Barbara or Santa Maria or Lompoc, you know, youth were twice as, would be twice as likely if they got involved with the system to stay in the system and be part of that.
So we have 90 seconds, but I just want to ask you, Saul, you speak with great passion about this. What got you involved? Do you have a history that touches on this? I mean, you speak like somebody that is doing this not just as a job, but with a passion.
We probably need an hour for that answer, but well, very have, shortly
now,
I will
now
say.
Now you have 65 seconds.
You know, the student, the, you know, if, when you begin to lose students, you know, it gives you that passion. Earlier we talked about Luis Angel Linares, they used to call Little Nacho, who passed away at the Saks Fifth Avenue incident. You know, he was my student and I knew him. And so that really pushed to do this work that we're doing now. You know, I've gone to visit his graveside numerous times. His dad works at the cemetery where he's buried. So I've met with his dad there at the cemetery over the grave and had some conversations. And so just that personal, you know, it's personal. It's not just a job. It's part of, you know, it's become part of the who I am.
You know, it sounds great. And you, and Jill, you obviously have been studying the subject, and now you have this opportunity to actually put to work your academic credentials to actually get something done, which you don't find always in academia.
Thank you. Yes. When I was a school psychologist, I was always frustrated that the system wasn't helping me as much as it could, and I wanted to change the system, so that's why I went back into academia.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for all you do. It's really terrific, and it's really important to our community. And thank you all for listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you next week.
It's